Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 23rd, 2011. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain markets with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, Europe's top court may have opened the door to additional genetically modified crops. We'll have that in other stories. And in part two of his series about the history of corn, Todd Gleason explores how corn was adopted to Midwest growing conditions. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On the Chicago Board of Trade and the Kansas City Board of Trade, things are rather quiet and down pretty much across the board. There is an exception with the crude oil contract for May, which is up 78 cents a barrel currently at 105.75. In Kansas City, the May wheat contract was up to 850 and a half for the high, 824 and a quarter for the low, settlement at 830. That was down 15 cents a bushel. The July ended down 15 and a quarter in KC at 840 and a half. On the Chicago Board of Trade, May wheat ended down 8 cents a bushel at 714 and a quarter, the high today 730 and a quarter, the low 706. July down 7 and a half at the close of business at 750 and a quarter. May corn today settled at 681 a bushel, down 5 and 3 quarter cents, the high today 691 and a quarter there, the low 678 and a quarter. July corn ended down 5 and a half at 688 and a half. September settled down a quarter cent at 645 and a half. In the bean complex, May bean settled at 13.51 and a quarter, down 14 and a quarter cents today, up to 13.72 for the high, the low 13.50, so just above the low. July soybeans settled at 13.61, down 14 cents. August down 13 at the close at 13.57 and a half. September 13.45, down 11 and a half. May soybean meal ended down 6.40 at 3.60 even. Bean oil for May settled down 38 at 55.48. Live cattle for the day ended down 17 and a half cents at 114.10.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather forecast, he says today it includes less precipitation from late this week through next week. Flooding in the northwestern Corn Belt should temporarily decrease as temperatures become cool through this weekend. Warmer temperatures in the March 30th to April 6th period should bring a rapid return to flooding. The lower Midwest will see some rain during the next 2 weeks, but generalized soakings are not expected. Rain may delay the start of field work in early April. High temperatures Thursday through Sunday will be in the 30s and 40s, with 20s in many northern areas and 50s from portions of eastern Kansas to Kentucky. Highs Monday in the north will be in the 30s, with some 40s in the west, while southern areas see highs in the 40s with some 30s in the east.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Tom Rogers, tag-teaming again for the day along with Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon, Tom.
And we had a very, very quiet day today. In fact, not since November, apparently, did we have trade this light in the bean pit.
Well, Tom, definitely we did have some disappointing closes in the corn, soybean, and wheat market. The private meteorologists early this morning were talking about good rainfall in the winter wheat growing area, and as I understand it, they backed that off. And at the same time, we saw this continued excitement over in the energy market being higher, crude oil being a leader, gold and silver being higher, the stock market being higher. I had to smile a little bit. Kramer's bullish on gold today. And, you know, but definitely this augurs well for the price of cheaper corn, higher crude oil. It's just what the ethanol manufacturer wants with cheaper corn, higher energy prices, and it should encourage good corn use. We also are seeing certain isolated markets quite strong on bidding of corn, cash corn in the Midwest, and that also augurs that probably food companies are basically positioning themselves for higher prices, or they basically don't want to run out of corn when the time comes.
Yet with the higher energy prices today, corn still managed to fall by about 6 cents a bushel on the nearby.
Yeah, one of the private newsletters that we kind of glance at talked about inadequate corn acreage and inadequate acreage on the March planting intentions report, but the market basically kind of put that on the side burner. The market is looking at, in our opinion, some higher corn acres, smaller soybean acres, and probably acreage of total acreage planted, not like what the USDA talked about in their economic February and analysts in Washington in February.
So what was it that brought the corn down today?
Well, I think a couple things. The corn market would like to have more information.
Right.
And more information about the China sales. They are looking at pretty good truck lines and some of the Midwest processing plants. They'd like to see a little more exports on corn, and I think that that could occur if we do see some shipment. They're still trying to struggle with the Japanese problem. And at the same time, they're wanting to wait for the March planting intentions report. And then the final, I think, deal is that the bull and the bear got beat up last week, and I think it cost them a lot of money on both sides of the fence.
Speaking of more information, do you feel that things are pretty much squared away position-wise for the grain stocks report coming up and other reports?
I think that this higher crude oil price is a tremendous dilemma for the marketplace. It's going to prevent, I think, the market from backing off a lot. And so the Libyan situation is not only a world concern, particularly in energy, but also some political problems in Washington. And I think that's going to be something that's going to be watched very closely. I think the Japanese problem, they're starting to work a little more and get some grain into some of those southern ports and move them around. So I think that problem is pretty close to being put to bed.
Can you point or talk to about either of those two issues and point to something in the market and say that's one of the reasons why it moved as it did today?
Well, I think that the big factor is, of course, with the crude oil market up 78 cents at the present time, was a factor that we did see the metals market stronger. And I think also it's one factor that we're seeing the stock market move higher. And there is some talk of some higher interest rates down the road. But the big factor is that the crude oil market being stronger is a lot of concern, because if it does go too much higher, it's going to take disposable spending away from the consumer.
There was a thought that there was some profit taking going on today as well. How is this all playing out right now, and what is the technical picture looking like?
Yeah, the trend is down in corn, soybeans, and wheat. And quite frankly, we did see some slowdown in orders filled today. The phones were very active. I think the trader would like to have the best world of two worlds. I think they want to have some price protection on the downside, but they want to leave the positions and have market strategies to take care of a runaway market if it would occur on either the planning report or a dry weather forecast this summer. So as a result of that, we're hearing and talking to people that want to have price protection, but also limit, leave open their upside price levels.
Average estimate for the early Thursday Census Bureau crush showed U.S. soy crush in February at 129.7 million bushels, well below last February. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the one thing that soybeans with the carryover the way it is, I'm going to say that the soybean industry is managing inventory and they want to have some beans in the silos so when crush margins do get better in the summer time frame, particularly in the June, July, August time frame, they want to have soybeans to crush. It's probably a market strategy that to slow down the crush so they do have inventory when the market does get tighter.
With about 30 seconds or so, what do you say is a bottom line for producers?
Well, to be careful, and I think the market is still very strong, and it's going to have a lot of excitement throughout the spring.
All right. Thanks for your time, Paul.
Have a nice day.
And you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's located in Oakland, Illinois. It's the Closing Market Report. I'm Tom Rogers. And now here's Dave Dickey with a look at agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Europe's top court dealt a huge blow to the anti-GE foods lobby yesterday, saying states broke European Union law by halting genetically engineered crop cultivation without first seeking action in Brussels. For countries defending a flood of legal action by GE food giants led by U.S.-based Monsanto, it marked a potential fatal blow for campaigners fighting to contain the march of engineered crops. Monsanto applied for MON 810 reauthorization in 2007 for 10 years, but France the next year outlawed its growing. The court ruling says that the safeguard clause may not be invoked by member states on their own, but must go through the European Commission, who will decide if there are health or environmental issues. A spike in radiation levels in Tokyo tap water spurred new fears about food safety today. Radiation has seeped into vegetables, raw milk, the water supply, and seawater. Meanwhile, Germany today became the latest nation to start extra checks on Japanese food imports to ensure that they are free from radioactivity. France yesterday asked the European Commission to look into a harmonized system on controls on radioactivity in food and feed imports from Japan. Ethanol groups remained in negotiations yesterday as talks continued over a plan to restructure the 45-cent per gallon volumetric ethanol excise tax credit, commonly called the blender's credit. Four key groups in the industry declined to comment or respond to questions about a meeting held Monday with USDA rural development officials regarding the industry's roadmap beyond the blender's credit. Since getting another one-year extension in the blender's credit last December, ethanol policy has been under criticism in the current Congress. The ethanol groups have pushed that in exchange for giving up the blender's credit, they would like to see either tax credits or another program to offer incentives for fueling stations to install blender pumps across the country. The Center for Food Safety and other groups have mounted a new legal defense against USDA's deregulation of Roundup Ready alfalfa. The groups said USDA's inspection service failed to examine the environmental and socioeconomic effects of deregulation in making its decision. They want the previous decision dropped and want USDA to be required to complete a, quote, proper environmental review. The groups asserted that deregulation will cause gene contamination in conventional and organic alfalfa. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization today says that world wheat output will rise in 2011. Global wheat output is expected to rise 3.4% to 676 million tons in 2011 due to improved yields and increased planted acres. Global 2011 wheat crops, though, will remain below the bumper harvests of 2008 and 2009. U.S. wheat output is expected to fall 5.8% to 56.6 million tons, the smallest crop since 1970. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Corn, as we know it today, is a relatively young crop in comparison to the age of the world. All this week, Todd Gleason is reporting on the history of corn with retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer. Troyer spent 7 years researching and writing about his favorite crop. Today, the two explore how corn was adapted to growing conditions in the Midwest.
In the 1840s, there were about 250 varieties of corn. They originated in Virginia, Tennessee, and Kentucky. As farmers in these states began their movement north and westward into Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa, they brought those crosses with them. 40 years later, in the 1880s, these producers had adapted the 250 varieties to the local conditions in the states across the Midwest. It resulted in 1,000 locally adapted open-pollinated varieties of corn. In 1888, Iowa, for the first time ever, raised more corn than any other state in the Union. The extra 750 varieties of open-pollinated corn, says retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer, were more drought-tolerant and shorter-seasoned than the original 250.
Out of those 1,000 varieties, I don't know the exact number, but there were probably 20 or 30 varieties that were grown much more than the others. One thing that contributed to that was the corn shows.
One of the most popular varieties was called Limming. It was developed about 40 or 50 miles northeast of Cincinnati, Ohio, in Wilmington, and had won a corn show in Paris, France. It was the first widely adapted variety of yellow corn. Half of all the yellow corn grown in the U.S. was at one time Limming corn. It actually represented just one quarter of the total U.S. corn crop, because 50% of the corn grown in the mid-1800s was white dent corn, not yellow dent corn. Well, the next big variety was to become the foundation of almost all of today's hybrid corn. It was called Reed's Yellow Dent. Troyer says Robert Reed developed the variety by accident when he moved from Russellville, Ohio to Delavan, Illinois. In that first year, he planted and saved back seed from a variety called Gordon Hopkins corn. It had been planted late in the season. The following spring, he planted the Gordon Hopkins corn again.
He didn't run a germination test, and he got a field of corn where the stand was too good to tear up, but it wasn't as good as it should be. So he went in and he hand-planted what they called a common early yellow flint that was grown in the area. And because the early corn was planted later, they crossed. And then over a period of at least 40 years, Robert Reed and then later James Reed selected Reed's Yellow Dent.
It became very popular after winning the corn show at the Chicago Columbian Exposition. Troyer says because of the win, farmers oftentimes called Reed's Yellow Dent World's Fair corn. A Perry Holden, head of the agronomy department at the University of Illinois, evangelized Reed's Yellow Dent, and he convinced the Funk brothers of Bloomington, Illinois, to start producing and selling Reed's Yellow Dent. Holden later took a position at Iowa State University and took 600 bushels of Reed's Yellow Dent with him. Troyer says some Iowa seedsmen were not very happy about the introduction of an Illinois corn in their state.
It soon replaced a lot of the varieties that were formerly in Iowa.
Reed's Yellow Dent and livestock feeding trial studies from the University of Wisconsin and Purdue are the major reasons U.S. corn farmers abandoned white corn. By the way, most of the 1,000 original pollinated varieties developed and grown in the Midwest were white corn. The university studies proved pigs grew faster when they ate yellow corn. It was because yellow corn provided a good source of vitamin A, and white corn did not. This one attribute, Vitamin A eliminated the majority of the genetic material farmers and corn breeders would work with to develop hybrid corn in the 1920s and 30s. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
This is the Closing Market Report, and joining us now with analysis of the cash grain market is Scott Butcher with the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Well, kind of a slow time for the elevators, and basis moved down a little bit, I guess, today, right?
Yeah, things are going to start probably strengthening up here on the basis front just because it gets nicer outside and the weather starts to improve. Guys are finding other things to do other than moving corn, so...
So at the moment, we're not seeing a whole lot of activity in the market, and when do you expect that to start happening?
Well, definitely we're waiting for next week's report, the March 31st report for planting intentions from the USDA. That's the big thing that's coming down the pike here, so we'll see what happens with those numbers, and then that'll kind of give us our direction here for a while until we start talking about weather.
The shipping costs apparently are going up, too, at this point, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you've got fuel costs are continuing to rise, so it's definitely creating issues for everybody.
One note on the soybean basis right now, and just explain a little about what the soybean basis is doing now.
Soybean basis is basically the same right now, although we are seeing, you know, not as much maybe movement towards the April month as what we are seeing in corn. I think that it's probably going to stay strong, but it feels like right now that a lot of the bean processors are kind of feeling like they've got enough beans for a minute and probably not going to get real aggressive here soon.
It says that some exporters may still need some nearby supplies to load export ships. Any of that drawing on the market at all?
Yeah, I think it's maybe it's slow to come to the market, it feels like. I mean, there just doesn't seem like right now there's a whole lot of demand.
What other factors are you looking at as possibly moving prices in any way in the near future?
Well, I definitely think the biggest things right now, you know, obviously are the outside markets, what we have going on with fund movement, and then also, you know, what we have coming up. You know, the acreage battle is the biggest issue that we have right now, and that's going to, you know, be around for a while.
And how is that all going to affect bean basis and corn basis in the months to come, I suppose, weeks to come at least, I guess, with acreage still being fought over?
Yeah, I think things are, you know, definitely tied to the futures market. What the futures market does, you know, obviously the basis reflects. So if there is, you know, still decent cash movement, then, you know, basis won't have to improve much. But, you know, we really think that there's a lot of corn and beans both that have already been sold from old crops. So it definitely is going to affect things for the months to come.
Anything else that's weighing on the market right now?
I don't believe so.
All right. Tell us what your prices are at the moment.
Right now for cash corn, we're $6.71 and beans $13.33.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Thank you.
Scott Butcher is with the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. We got a look at the cash grain markets every couple of days here on the Closing Market Report on your local agricultural station, including WILL in Champaign-Urbana. Coming up, a look at our weather forecast for the growing areas with meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Stay tuned.
It's National Chip and Dip Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1699, John Bartram was born. An American naturalist and explorer, he is considered the father of American botany. Bartram established a world-renowned botanical garden in Philadelphia in 1728. In 1857, Fanny Merritt Farmer was born. An American culinary authority, she wrote the 1896 edition of the Boston Cooking School Cookbook, which became known in future editions as the Fanny Farmer Cookbook. Farmer was director of the Boston Cooking School and founder of Miss Farmer's School of Cookery. And she is often cited as the first cookbook author to introduce standard measurements. In 1880, John Stevens patented the grain crushing mill. His machine allowed flour production to increase by 70%, making it much more affordable. A barrel of flour crushed by the machine went for $2. Also in 1880, a patent for a glass milk bottle was issued to Warren Glass Works. And in 1912, the Dixie Cup was developed by Lawrence Llewellyn and Hugh Moore. Its original name was the Health Cup, and it changed to the Dixie Cup in 1919. The name came from a line of dolls made by the Dixie Doll Company. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Want to begin with weather in the plains, the wheat-growing areas, and ask you what is the latest there?
Well, it does look like the region is going to get an opportunity, actually two of them, to pick up on some needed moisture. We have been below average on precipitation in the majority of the west central and southwestern high plains since last September. It's a long time to go, and the crops really need a good drink of water. Well, we've got two systems. One is Sunday and Monday, and the other one is going to be March 31st through about the 4th of April. And during those two periods of time, we should get at least a good distribution of precipitation across the region. I'm not convinced that the amounts are going to be all that great, but we should see enough that temporary improvements will occur in topsoil moisture and crop conditions. This first event, Sunday and Monday, may come as in the forms of rain and snow, and we could end up with a fair amount of snowfall across western Kansas, maybe 3 to 8 inches, and moisture totals running anywhere from maybe 0.2 inch all the way up to 0.8 inch. Now, the 0.8 inch amount of moisture will be more in central Kansas than it will be in the west, but nevertheless, all these areas should get good moisture. The Texas Panhandle will see the lightest amounts on this first event and then do better with the event that comes up on the early days of April.
Are some parts of the Corn Belt becoming too wet?
Well, you know, I think yes and no. I guess how can that be, right? Well, the upper parts of the region are definitely getting wetter as we deal with this latest snow and rain event that's underway right now. Lower parts of the Midwest, though, have actually seen some improving tendency over the past several days after being too wet earlier this month. And the forecast is going to shift us back around to a cool and moist weather pattern. I think that's the buzz out there in the marketplace today. The weather trend is definitely going to turn around. We're going to get away from these 60 and 70 degree highs and the limited amount of moisture, and instead we'll see highs in the 40s, 50s, and some 60s, and a lot more precipitation coming and going periodically over this next 10 days, the 2 weeks, especially next week, though.
Do you think that this planting season will be a normal planting season, or do you think that weather will have a factor?
Well, weather will be a factor. We know for sure that we're going to have issues in the upper parts of the Midwest, in Minnesota, the Dakotas in particular, because of the extreme amounts of snow that needs to still be melted and the river and stream flooding that's likely to come along. So that area, without a doubt, is going to have a problem. And that's, of course, assuming that they don't get another drop of moisture, and that's totally unlikely to occur. They will see more precipitation, so the situation up there may be serious. In the heart of the Midwest, I think we will see a fairly frequent occurrence of rain in April with a cooler bias in the temperatures. That is going to delay field operations at times. There's always going to be a few of those farms out there that no matter what, they're going to get that crop in the ground in early April, but I think for the majority of the region, we're going to be looking at a little bit later than usual planting dates for quite a few areas, maybe not in a dramatic sense. but there is definitely going to be some delay.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a great afternoon.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that's today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.